This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427JOY949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 10th of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcuri. Tonight on the show, we speak to trans folk of WA, who have announced two new groups for trans and gender diverse people in Perth, launching this month. The new social space provides a casual hangout space, as well as a twice monthly support group for trans people who struggle with suicidal thoughts called Discharged. We speak to Housing for the Age Action Group, who have launched a website with information specifically for older LGBTI Australians, helping older members of the LGBTI community find affordable housing. And is it too late to say you're sorry? After Kate McGregor stated she was wrong to oppose the Safe Schools program in an article last week, is it too little, too late? Or do we need to allow more room for diverse opinions and for people to admit they're wrong in our communities?
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Last year, when the data by the Telethon Kids Institute in Perth, Trans Pathways, was released, it showed us that young trans people are approximately 10 times more likely than other young Australians to experience serious anxiety and depression. The survey was the first of its kind, with 859 trans people surveyed aged 14 to 25, along with 194 parents and guardians. And the results showed that one in every two gender-diverse young persons surveyed had attempted to end their life. One in every two. It's a sobering statistic when other research looking at all young Australians shows one in every 12 has self-harmed. Armed with this research, the community organisation Trans Folk of WA have announced two new groups for trans and gender-diverse people in Perth, launching this month. With the new social space providing a casual hangout space for trans adults, as well as a separate social group for trans men, trans women, non-binary people, trans young people and parents. And also, they'll host a twice-monthly support group for trans people who struggle with suicidal thoughts, Discharged, which will create an open dialogue in a peer support space with other like-minded individuals for trans or gender-diverse people who are struggling with suicidal thoughts. I spoke to Emery Wishart from Trans Folk of WA.
Trans Folk of WA is a peer-led support service. We do safe spaces and group hangouts, social events. We also do information guides for people, like how to change your name, what GPs are in your area. And we do stuff like on our advocacy side, where we collaborate with government and community groups to try and effect real change for how trans and gender diverse people are recognised and like kept safe in the community. Trans Folk started up as Trans Men of WA, and that was back in 2012. Nick, our executive director, he just started it to try and find some friends, and it's turned into this peer support service that really helps a lot of people.
The new social space group, which will be on one Sunday afternoon each month, beginning on May 20th, will provide a casual hangout space in Leederville for all trans adults. And monthly Sunday sessions will also continue to include separate social groups for trans men, trans women, non-binary people, trans young people and parents.
Previous months we've had the groups really segregated, like a trans men group, trans women and a non-binary folk group. And this month we have incorporated them all together, so there's a social space where people of all different genders can come and hang out and interact and sort of build their sense of community, create friendships with each other and have like a real sense of belonging. We'll still have the other groups available in a separate room. So if people want to ask transition-specific questions, specifically like how a trans man might get on hormones or a trans woman, those separate groups will still be available for people to get that information. But we're all about building this community and reducing the isolation people feel. So the social space is really going to engage with that and let people just hang out and have a good time. It's really important to have that sense of belonging. Like when you're in a space with, when you know everyone in there is trans or gender diverse, it's really easy to just feel accepted and be yourself. Like, cool, you're trans, so are we. Like, let's just have a chat and be friends. There's no sort of pressure to explain yourself or try and, sort of explain what's going on for you. You can if you want, but you can just hang out and be accepted and feel like you belong somewhere, like you're the same, and it's all cool. It's normalised.
One of the brilliant things about the space Transfolk of WA providing is that it's a space for young trans and gender diverse people, as well as their parents, as well as groups for other ages in the communities, allowing not just support, but time together, where you don't have to be concerned about what you say or how you act, because you're with people who are just like you.
For a couple of years now, we've had a space for the parents to come along and chat and sort of like talk about what's going on for them, whether it's positive or negative, but we really wanted to bring in the focus on the trans juniors group. This one's been going on for a couple of months now, and we've got quite a few young trans people from the Perth metro area that come on along, and they just sit down and do craft sessions and watch movies. And it's been really, really positive and like really rewarding for us to see the increase in confidence. Like young people come along and they're pretty like shy and scared, and then they start sort of connecting with other children or young teens, and they make friendships and they like come back along ready to hang out, and they seem so much more sure of themselves. Like it's really increasing their well-being coming along to this space and finding people that are really similar to them.
As well as the social space, Transfolk of WA are also launching a twice-monthly support group for trans people who struggle with suicidal thoughts, Discharged, running on the second and fourth Sunday of each month between 3 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. beginning this Sunday, the 13th of May. Last year's results from the Trans Pathway Survey, where 859 trans people were surveyed aged 14 to 25 years, showed that one in every two gender-diverse young person had attempted to end their life. One in every two. The program's name, Discharge, stands for Deserving of Inclusion, Support, Community, Hope, Authenticity, Respect, Growth, Empathy and Determination. I'll say it again, one in every two.
Transfolk really saw the need that we have to have this sort of group like Discharged. I don't know if you're aware of the 2017 Trans Pathways. So that sort of stated that 48% or one in two young trans people attempt suicide, and so like having a group that's specifically for trans and gender diverse people that sort of covers that suicidal topic, and it's a space you can come into and talk about what's going on for you or how you went through a hard time. We thought that's really important, considering such a huge percentage of our community not even thinks about suicide, but actually attempts. So having that space where they can come in and just be accepted and have their like feelings and emotions validated by peers. So the group's peer run, and the facilitators also have that shared experience of suicidal thoughts. There's no sort of power imbalance around that. It's not a clinical setting at all. It's really about building community and having members really validate each other and share their experiences. And after the group's done, we encourage people to like catch up for coffees. And it's all about reducing their isolation. Like there's a real evidence base that when people are accepted and have a community around them supporting them, that it's way less likely for people to attempt suicide. So groups like Discharge, which is following the alternative to suicide approach coming out of America, is all about decreasing that isolation and increasing the community. So like building people's confidence that they're not alone, and people do understand and accept that they're going through hard stuff, but there's people like them and they belong. The alternative to suicide approach is coming out of America, and rather than focusing on a crisis like prevention sort of strategy where if someone says they're suicidal, they're really encouraged to head into the emergency department, Alternatives to Suicide is a support group where you come along and we acknowledge that people might be suicidal or have been suicidal in the past, but we're just there to really listen to your story and your experience and validate your feelings rather than pushing you into sort of like a clinical crisis sort of situation, where we really believe that people able to share their story and be acknowledged and accepted by other people is going to help reduce the likelihood of suicide attempts. So that's the biggest difference between alternatives to suicide and sort of a crisis prevention strategy.
The importance of peer-led groups such as this for trans and gender diverse people makes all the difference. The power of acceptance isn't something you should have to fight for. It should just be. You should just be accepted and welcomed.
So this sort of space, like discharge or even the social setting where people have access to information from our volunteers, is really important for trans and gender diverse people, just so they don't feel alone. And like, if you don't know these spaces exist, then it can be really hard finding medical professionals to help you on your journey. Like, there is still, you can go to a doctor and they have no idea how to treat trans people. So we can help get you on that right path, like GPs that know what's going on. And then if you connect with peers, having a sense of belonging is amazing. Like, going into a room and feeling like you're not different. People understand you and you're not weird. You're just normal. You're just someone else in the room, and everyone accepts that. That's a really powerful feeling of acceptance. And having trans people engage with our support sessions like that is really important in this positive well-being community approach that we've got going. We're hoping it's going to have a real powerful impact on the community here in Perth, and hopefully it'll pop up in other places as well, because it is the reality of being a trans and gender diverse person, especially in Australia. And like, yeah, the survey has really highlighted that. So we want to really affect change, and trans folks like the perfect organisation to hold these sort of events.
That was Emery Wishart from Transfolk of WA. You can find out more about the social space and discharge via the Transfolk of WA Facebook page, and we'll also post links to these on our social media. The new social space group launches on May 20th and will be once a month, with the first discharge meeting this Sunday, the 13th of May, running on the second and fourth Sunday of each month between 3 p.m. and 4:30 p.m.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
In recent years, we've become more and more aware of the need for changes to be made for LGBTI aged care support and services, which allows members of our communities to continue to be themselves and not feel they have to step back into the closet to get the support and care that they need. Housing for the Aged Action Group, or HAG, has just launched a website with information specifically for older LGBTI Australians. Rachel Tyler-Jones and myself spoke to Fiona York, the Executive Officer at HAG, about how this resource could help other members of the LGBTI community find affordable housing.
Could you just start by telling us a little bit more about HAG and what it does?
Yeah, so we're a specialist organisation for older people who are trying to access housing. There's only two specialist older people housing services in the whole of Australia, and we're one of them. So what we try to do is link older people, and when we say older, we mean people aged 50 years and older, who are either at risk of homelessness or already homeless, and try to get them into public and social housing.
Now, I understand that HAG has just launched a series of websites that are specific to the LGBTI community. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's actually just one page on our website, and it's specifically targeting the LGBTI community in terms of making older people in that community aware of some of the resources that are out there, but also to let people know that they're welcome at our service and that we hope to provide a service that, you know, makes people feel safe and okay to come in if they are having housing difficulties or they do want to be linked in with services. So we were looking at all of our resources on our website more generally, and we realised that was a bit of a gap, and we really wanted to try and reach out to older people in those communities.
Have you had any feedback from the website yet?
It's very, very new, and we're really open to hearing what people think about it, actually. Before we put it up, we've got people with connections in the communities on staff and in our committee of management, so we ran it past them and did a bit of research that way as well. We had a couple of likes on our tweets, but we haven't really had much any feedback. So we're most welcome to hearing what people think and if they find it useful, if we're missing anything, and, yeah, what people would like to see.
So why do you think that kind of targeted information is so important for the LGBTI community?
We've done heaps and heaps of work over the last couple of years with culturally diverse communities. And one of the things that we learned from working with elders in those communities was that it's not really enough just to say, we're a welcoming place, come on in. And lots of services, I guess, do sort of say that, and probably, and that's fine. But what we found was that you really needed to reach out to the communities in a more specific and targeted way, rather than having sort of this general information that says we're welcoming of all people, regardless of their backgrounds or whatever. And so we wanted to apply those sort of same learnings, I guess, to other communities as well. And we know that there's specific barriers for people, especially older people, who may have had a very different life experience and grown up in a very different time to what younger people are growing up in now, and maybe not feel as safe coming to mainstream services. So we wanted to put some specific messages out there that say that we are inclusive and respectful and welcoming and safe, and that people from all backgrounds can come in and talk to us over the phone or drop in at our offices and have a chat about any housing difficulties they might be experiencing.
What are some of the specialised services you find this community needs?
There's definitely a big gap for housing generally for older people, and we're really finding it hard to house people right at the moment because of a whole range of reasons. But I think it would be great if there could be some more affordable housing specifically targeting different communities that may want to live together as they get older and have a range of choices for people as they age, rather than assuming that every person who's older already owns their own home. That's not actually the case for a lot of the people that come through our door. A lot of them are living in private rental and find themselves really struggling to be able to afford to live as they get older, especially when they're on the pension. And the housing options just aren't really there. So when we were looking around for what's out there, we actually didn't find much for specifically for LGBTI older people. There's a number of social groups that we were aware of that we thought were useful to put up on our webpage, because social connection is just as important really as housing. But in terms of specific purpose-built or affordable housing targeting LGBTI communities, there's very little out there. And yeah, so that's one of the gaps that we did find.
Can I just clarify, do you offer any kind of link up for, you're obviously doing things with housing, do you do anything with people who are looking to move more into aged care?
We'll do an assessment. We'll have a chat to someone over the phone and find out what their needs are. And if they do need to be linked into residential care, we can help with that. We can help make referrals to and explain the system, I guess, because it's pretty complicated. But what we try to do is find affordable housing for people that aren't at that stage of requiring residential care. And most older people aren't. There's a very small percentage of older people want to live in residential care and need to, and most people are independent as they age and want to be able to live somewhere around community and friends in places that they want to live, but these days it's getting less and less affordable.
I think one of the great things that you highlighted was the fact that, especially for a lot of aged care people, the fact is they don't need to be going into the kind of assisted living that they end up in the time. So I'm really glad that you highlighted that, because especially within our communities, a lot of people feel like they have to go back into the closet as a way they can prepare themselves. So this is really great.
Yeah, and it's true. I did some training, the really great training that Transgender Victoria ran a couple of years ago on LGBTI and aged care, and it had some really shocking case studies about exactly that when people are moving into residential care, how completely inappropriate it is. So if people can stay living in the community surrounded by their friends and their supports, it's much, much better outcome, and that's what we'd be trying to strive for.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
If anyone feels like they're having trouble with their housing, struggling with the rent or couch surfing or staying with friends and feeling like they want to find something more permanent, feel free to give us a call, jump on the website, give us a call, or drop in at our office on Flinders Lane and we'll have a chat.
You can find HAG at Ross House Association, a self-managed five-storey building located in Melbourne's Flinders Lane. That was Rachel Tyler-Jones and myself speaking to Fiona York, the Executive Officer of Housing for the Aged Action Group.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Catherine McGregor, a transgender advocate and former Australian of the Year, publicly came out against the Safe Schools program. But last week, she acknowledged in an article that she was wrong to oppose Safe Schools after an encounter made her realise the damage her opposition had caused. Many took to social media acknowledging the bravery of stating you were wrong, but also not forgiving the damage this support caused. Support against a program that protects and respects young LGBTIQA+ Australians. This got us wondering, is it too late to say you're sorry? Darcy Meehan investigates.
Catherine McGregor, a notable Australian transgender woman and finalist for Australian of the Year in 2016, recently apologised for her previous stance against the Safe Schools program. Many members of the trans community were extremely upset when Catherine spoke out against the program, which aimed to create a safer and more inclusive environment for same-sex, attracted, intersex and gender-diverse students. We sat down with Dina Curie, executive producer for The Informer, and Matt Wade, the editor of Star Observer, to discuss the aftermath of the McGregor controversy and how the apology made them feel.
There are pros and there are cons. There are ways that you feel really happy because you get to see a conversation with someone saying that they were wrong in regards to safe schools, but then you also don't want to feel warm and fuzzy about it because you're aware of the damage that's been caused by certain parts of this commentary that's occurred. And Catherine has taken the brunt of that for, you know, years from our community on social media in so many different ways. And it really does raise the question where you realise things aren't as black and white as they may seem. It is pretty massive when we actually realise that, yeah, she's standing up and saying, I was completely wrong. Yes, she's had a dig at Ros Ward in the piece that continued on. And a lot of people have raised that on social media. But it's kind of time to start realising you never get the whole picture when you get a tweet or a byline or something like that. And being able to turn around and have a conversation where someone who was used, whose commentary was used as a way against pushing safe schools through, and actually having them go, oh, I realise I was wrong, I think is a really important conversation for us to be having.
I had mixed feelings, to be honest. I think my preliminary thoughts were that it's great that she is growing, I guess, in that respect, because we should always obviously allow space for people to change their minds if they want to, or also be educated on particular issues and ultimately change them. However, there's still a lot more that she could be doing to, I guess, advocate for trans rights. I mean, putting an article out there and saying, you know, I was wrong about it is one thing, even though in that article she also still kind of called Ros Ward, you know, the co-founder of Safe Schools, a fanatic and things like this. Despite that, it's great that obviously she's come around on the actual issue, but I think going forward it'll kind of really be indicative of how she really feels, how she acts.
McGregor stated her conversations with a young trans man, Charles O'Grady, are what led to her change of mind. O'Grady took a more compassionate approach, talking openly with McGregor instead of fighting her. So is compassion the way forward, or is it too late now the damage is done?
When you come at a person with compassion, it really does make that difference, and that's the really important thing that I took away from the article that she wrote, was the fact that someone engaged with her in this in a way that it hadn't been approached for her, or talking to her about this at a time where she was really open to what this conversation meant. And that does, I know for a lot of people within schools and for a lot of families that feel like things have been taken away, that may not make them feel better, but it's important for us to stop and look and realise that there is room for people to turn around and admit that they were wrong. And it's a double-edged sword because it all depends on the type of compassion that you want to feel. I know many transgender people who acknowledge it's nice that they've heard the apology but are still really angry for what it's meant, because they've had this prominent figure within our country, a prominent transgender servicewoman and important woman, turn around and say things that have damaged their community further. And it really has... of course there needs to be compassion. Of course there does. But I think a lot of people are hesitant to how much compassion they feel that they should bring. I sat after reading the article feeling uncomfortable with the fact that I didn't feel comfortable. I wanted to be like, this is so great, but something in me didn't feel like it was the case because of all the damage that had been done. And she does acknowledge that in her article as well.
This raises the question of how we should treat others when we think they're wrong, especially when there's potential to change minds.
generally, a lot of people that may have, I guess, anti-LGBTI may have conservative views around the LGBTI community, they should be given the space to grow and be educated and learn, which obviously Kate is kind of indicating through this piece. But I guess when she was speaking out against safe schools, it was during such a turbulent time for that issue. You know, every day there was a new, you know, nasty headline in The Australian about that program. And I guess having her voice behind it, in a sense, gave that argument a lot of validity because she's actually a trans person. So I guess the damage caused by that, I think one opinion piece isn't enough. I think that's great that she's indicating that she's grown and feels differently. But I guess going forward, I mean, how she speaks out about trans issues going forward, and particularly young trans people, will, I guess, be more... It'll tell us a bit more.
I think it's important for us to be able to acknowledge that it's okay for us to not necessarily be okay with how we feel about the apology, while also acknowledging that it's wonderful that the apology happened. I think we forget as a community that we need to leave a little bit of room for people to sit in the middle, or not necessarily sit on the side of the fence that we're on. And we forget that sometimes and go, if you're not with us, then you're against us. Then you're in the on the side that fits with somebody else. And I think this has really highlighted, while I still don't feel 100% after reading it with what occurred or how it occurred or even what's written, I have to give so many props for the simple fact that she's standing up and saying she was wrong. And we need to acknowledge that there are people within our community who don't feel the same way as us.
Moving forward and looking back, what should the response to McGregor be? Is she beyond redemption, or will this mistake be forgiven?
So, I mean, it's nice that I guess part of the reason why she changed her mind is because she obviously was interacting with young trans people who told her that they were really hurt by how she had spoken out so strongly against it previously. But yeah, I guess there may still be some growth to do. I don't want to, I mean, throw under the bus per se, but she still kind of spoke out against Ros Ward in that piece as well. And I mean, Ros Ward was one of the main orchestrators behind the program, which obviously is incredible. So, for me, backing safe schools and admitting that you're wrong is a massive step. But then I guess going forward, the way that you, I guess, interact with trans issues, particularly around trans young people, will be the real indicator.
I think it's wonderful for all of us to sit back and look at any part of the last 6 months, let alone 2 years, in regard to this fight for equality that's happened on many different levels. And for safe schools specifically, many of us have been really upset with the way in which it's been used as political football and used as a way to really take away something that's so important to the younger generations. It's so important to young LGBTIQA+ children and people because of what they go through and with the higher risk of suicide they're in. But it's also the reality of what we're a part of. And I don't know, I can't look back and go, well, it would have been nicer if this one bit had happened there or one thing had happened there, because it was a completely different time. To assume that no one except went and spoke to her with an open hand of friendship in regard to this, I think would be wrong. It's how she came to a new opinion, but it's also because we're in a different space and time now to when this was all going on. I don't know whether it's something she heard or would have heard at that time, but I'm at least grateful that even now, while some may say it's too little too late, it's never too late to say you're sorry. That was Matthew Wade and myself discussing welcoming when people change their minds about issues affecting our communities, but also acknowledging that that doesn't necessarily wipe the slate clean. How much room is there for diverse opinions in our communities? We'd like to hear your thoughts. Let us know by The Informer's Facebook page or Twitter.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow up on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, please get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dina Curie.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.